Welcome to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Women of Washington is a series of weekly radio interviews with Washington, D.C.'s most ambitious and influential female executives, role models for the next generation of Washington leaders. Aileen and Gigi interview the most accomplished women in Washington who share their life lessons and secrets to success.
I'm Aileen Black.
And I'm Gigi Shum.
Today, our guest is Stella Graves, CEO and co-founder of Netcom Incorporated. Our guest today has over 30 years of experience in executive leadership at Netcom. Stella provides overall leadership to the company. Prior to Netcom, she spent over 15 years with the federal government. Stella holds a bachelor's degree in business administration from the University of Maryland and a master's degree in public administration from Southern Illinois University.
So, Stella, you've had a very interesting career working in both the public and private sectors, providing technology and HR solutions. But we'll get into all of that. But before we do, let's talk about your background. So tell us a little bit about your family and where you grew up.
Well, I'm a native Washingtonian. My parents were immigrants from Sicily, Italy, and they came here with three small children. And I admire the risks and the sacrifices they made to come here to give their children a better opportunity in life. They left their families and their friends before Skype and internet existed, but they left to follow their dream to go to the land of opportunity.
So what was their dream? What did they do?
They wanted to give their children a better life. That was their primary reason they came. And because my father had been a merchant, a very successful merchant in Italy, but he was deaf. And when he came to the U.S., it was very difficult for him to learn the English language. But he was able to overcome his language barrier and actually own his own barbershop. And my mother was a very strong woman. It was a time when most women were stay-at-home moms, but she had to go to work out of necessity. And she was a seamstress, but never really learned English because there was no need. She worked with Italians. We lived among Italians in D.C. We socialized with Italians. We went to the Italian Catholic Church. She recognized that it was important for us to assimilate into the American culture and still maintain our Italian heritage. So eventually she decided she wanted to become the head seamstress at this men's exclusive clothing store and realized that English was a paramount requirement for the job. So she took it upon herself to learn English. It was very hard, you know, at the age of 50 to learn a new language. But actually, one of the things that prompted it was my husband was the first non-European to enter in our family. So it kind of gave her a reason to have to learn English. And she actually ultimately became the head seamstress. And so she reached a goal. She set out to go for a goal, and she reached it. And that gave me a lot of inspiration.
Wow, Stella, born and raised in D.C., that's rare.
Very rare.
So what was it like living in Anacostia?
Yes.
In the early 70s? That was a great deal of time of change. And speaking about diversity, I think there was a lot of change going on for rights of people of all color and nationalities.
It was. And we kind of were sheltered from it, actually, because we maintained our close community with the Italians. And We saw a lot of change. My parents, you know, ultimately moved to Montgomery County, but very, you know, late in the 70s. It was a good time to grow up in D.C. I'm very proud to be a native Washingtonian, actually.
Can you think of any stories about what it was like then versus now, especially as it pertains to diversity changes, maybe the way you were treated versus someone else or an observation that you had during the early 70s back then?
Well, you know, I'm just totally amazed how much D.C. is, where I grew up, has changed over the years. As a matter of fact, it was very interesting. I ran into a person who was from Anacostia and was a tour guide and wanted to do more touring of Anacostia. And I went back to the Navy Yard. We lived just over the 11th Street Bridge, and just amazed the amount of young life that was there and just the exuberance of that it's growing back to being a very alive community. You know, it had really become very depressed there, and but now it's coming back, and I'm really excited to see that happening for the younger generation.
You know, when we had a chance to talk earlier, you mentioned that you were in a school where it was segregated. Can you tell me about that?
We didn't even realize we were segregated. That wasn't an issue for us. We were Italians. There were blacks. We were all the same. We were all coming for the same reason, is to have a better opportunity in the U.S. And that's how we saw it.
But you were in different buildings, or?
Well, I didn't even realize it. We always talked about Our Lady. We went to St. Teresa's, and Our Lady of Perpetual Help was primarily black students. But actually, just recently, and I didn't even know it, a friend of mine actually said, oh, I went to OLPH. I said, oh, I didn't even realize that, you know. So, and he was not of color. And so it just, for us, really wasn't a whole, I guess because we were still young then and didn't understand. But I think actually, I'm sorry, it was more like, you know, like I said, when my husband came into the family and he was a first American, that was like a first.
So let's fast forward it here. What was your first job and how did you get it?
Okay, well, I was very fortunate. I did not pass the government typing test. So I was the youngest of five children, and I was expected to follow in my sister's footsteps, who had all served as top-level secretaries to senior officials in the federal government. But since I couldn't pass the typing test, I started as a GS-2 clerk, typing application forms for cell phones in your cars. You couldn't have a cell phone in your car unless you had approval by the FCC commission. Well, it was the most boring job I could ever imagine to have, and I never saw myself being able to achieve the level that my sisters had achieved since I couldn't type. So I decided I needed to find a way to go to college. Of course, my parents couldn't afford it. My sister had wanted to go to college, but there was no public universities in the D.C. at the time, and so there was really no affordable college at the time. Since we had moved to Maryland by the time I was ready to go to college, I could afford, you know, the public institution in Maryland with the help of my sister. So I started my career. I went back to college, and then I lived at home, and I was able to find a part-time job at the National Institutes of Health working in an administrative office. And I was fortunate I had a woman boss and a female coworker. And my boss was very flexible with my class schedules, and so I could work full time and still work. I worked part time and still was able to carry a full load. And working in the administrative office, I became very familiar with the rules and regulations of personnel, and I was very fascinated by it. So I decided to pursue a degree in business administration, with a concentration in personnel. So when I finally graduated, and it took me 4.5 years, I was fortunate to find a position as a personnel specialist at the Division of Computer Research and Technology at NIH. And from there, after I had our first child, I became the personnel officer for the National Library of Medicine. So my career in the federal government consisted of being an administrative technician, a personnel specialist, and a personnel officer. And then actually computers began to take a foothold in the government, and I had a very strong interest in automation. I didn't have the mind of a programmer, but I loved automation and seeing processes automated. So I actually grew out of being the personnel officer to becoming the first office automation specialist for the Library of Medicine.
Today in the studio, we're talking with Stella Graves, CEO and co-founder, Netcom. Stella, you stayed in the government for over 15 years, so it sounds like you had a great career there and progressed up the ladder. Being in HR at NIH must have been pretty interesting because you have so many different kinds of people, researchers and scientists and doctors coming to work at NIH. Any stories in particular that stand out in your mind?
Well, I absolutely loved working at NIH. It was just a wonderful environment. And after close to 15 years in personnel, I began to find it to be almost a little bit thankless, because if you could make the employers happy, sometimes employees would be grunting. If the employees were happy, sometimes the employers were grunting. So I started to grow out of personnel. Like I said, I started looking at how can I automate the processes that we have in our office. And so, I loved the NIH.
Any mentors or people that influenced your career in those early days?
Actually, I have to really contribute some of the mentoring to actually my husband. He worked also at the National Institutes of Health as a budget officer, deputy budget officer for the National Heart and Lung Institute. And he also was very interested in automating processes. And we would talk at night about how we could accomplish that. And so he really encouraged me to go towards that route and get out of the personnel environment.
Today in the studio, we're talking with Stella Graves, CEO and co-founder, NetComm. Coming up, we'll hear more about NetComm, the firm that Stella founded. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we're talking with Stella Graves, CEO and co-founder of NetComm. So, Stella, you started your own company at a very busy time in your life. You had three kids. Your husband also had quit his job to help build NetComm. Wow. What was the catalyst that made you start your own company? I mean, that's a lot.
Well, John and I both wanted a balance of a career and family life. And we thought the only way that was, and actually another big reason was we had bought shortly after we got married, we had bought a farm in Frederick. And we loved living on the farm and growing our own vegetables, but we were too far from our jobs, and the commute was long, and we were far from our family. So we decided to move back to NIH so that I could continue to work and be closer to work. But our goal was we wanted to maybe eventually get back to the farm. So how could we do that? And once PCs came to the work environment, we thought, wow, this technology is going to help us get back to the farm. So we came to a crossroad in our careers where we had to decide, are we going to continue with the 40 years in the government or do something else? And so John had the techie mind. So he actually quit first thinking he was going to be a consultant and build a business, but realized at that time it was really difficult to become a contractor after you'd worked for the government. It's not like it is now where many people will become. They had different rules and regulations back then. So he was able to get some work, but as subcontracting. So I decided I would also quit and try to help build the business. John had the brilliant idea of automating the budget process. He understood the budget process. He went down to our basement for 3 weeks and finally said, after one more compile, I'll have this done. And 3 weeks later, he had a software package that he was ready to introduce to the federal government. And I helped bring that package to the federal government by getting ourselves onto the GSA schedule, doing it on my own without any help. And that gave us credibility. And then more Institute. We work actually in all 28 institutes of the NIH, and we never really sought out the work. They came to us because they knew we were honest and we had integrity and that we were going to be responsive and deliver a product to them that would make their work easier and more efficient.
Most small businesses fail. What is your secrets of success, and would you do it again?
Definitely would do it again, and the success was having a good partner, and John's been my partner in life and my partner in work, and I think the synergy that we have between each other is what's helped us build our business.
So I have a specific question I want to ask about kind of how you complement each other, but you made a very interesting statement when you said that John has been your partner in life and your partner in business. So are there times that that's too much, that, you know, that's a lot of time together?
Yeah, it is. We used to, like I said, worked in Frederick, and we'd drive in together, and we'd, you know, had separate jobs, but we'd drive home again. And yeah, we spent a lot of time with each other, but we enjoy each other. And It's been, the other kids would say we fought a lot, and a lot of dinner conversations were over business. And they never really understood what we did, but, you know, it's been a good journey, and I wouldn't trade the journey.
And so what I was, that's great. What I was going to ask you was about your degree. You got a degree in business, and your early experience was in HR. So how did that help you? You mentioned that you were able to figure out how to get on the GSA schedule by yourself. So did that business degree, was that a good area of study for you to help out and begin, you know, start your own company?
You know, I think it really was. I didn't realize it actually, but I think it just was innate abilities that I really learned from college that did help me succeed. And I guess I attribute to I always remember my Latin teacher saying, if all else fails, follow the directions. And that's kind of how I've, you know, you read what you have to do and you use examples and you move forward. So I was actually kind of proud of getting onto the GSA schedule because I know a lot of people, you know, hire top-level firms to do it. And it was like, you know, there's not much to it if you just follow the directions. And, you know, GSA was there to help. And so we accomplished it.
That's great. We've had Kay Ely on the show, who runs the Schedule 70 for GSA, and she'll be happy to hear that, you know, people are able to figure it out, because I think that's their intent.
Well, I think it's getting easier. I mean, you know, when we did it, there wasn't all the internet that exists now, and there's just so much information there that if you just know where to look for it and how to find it, you can do it. It's, you know, it's not something to be afraid of, and that's something I think it's been mystique, and people have to just get over those fears and just do it.
So, you know, often when we have young people that talk to us, they will ask us, they have a dream of entrepreneurship and starting their own company, and they'll ask us what they should study or what skills they should have. And they do typically think that being that understanding technology and maybe having your husband John's skill set is the key that they need. But it occurs to me listening to you that the balance that you brought to it about sort of understanding the personnel side of it and sort of a broader business background is a good skill set for an entrepreneur as well.
I think anyone can do whatever they want to set their minds out to do. And not having any specific skill set is as important. Like, for instance, we don't just hire programmers. We just recently hired a criminologist. And she thought she wanted to be a lawyer, but now she's seeing a new passion in her life. So you don't want to pigeonhole yourself and just broaden your experience.
Today in the studio, we're talking with Stella Graves, CEO and co-founder of Netcom. Stella, I just recently read an article in Federal Times that Netcom received FedRAMP certification for Beacon. And I might want to add, the first women-owned corporation to get that status. Wow. Tell us about that.
We're really excited about it because we think that's the next step for credibility to our business. We really have been primarily focusing on the NIH, and we now, with the cloud, believe that we can bring our services to a broader range of agencies. And so we are hoping that this is actually our foot in the door. There's always, when you have your first job, you always need that foot in the door to prove yourself. And I think we've proven ourselves over the 30 years. We just need that next step to get into other agencies. And we've hired Sage, a communications PR, to help us do that. And I think now that we have FedRAMP, we're ready to move on.
Well, let's take a step back. You know, we've been reading a lot of controversy and some companies complaining about the difficulty and cost associated with obtaining FedRAMP. How long did it take you?
Well, it took us 18 months. It was costly, but it was, I think, worth the investment. And we're thinking that this is really going to be our opportunity to grow the business even larger than we are right now.
Let's talk about how expensive.
You know, honestly, I didn't pay attention to it. I put the trust and faith in my employees that they had a mission to accomplish. And all I know is they tell me it's expensive, but our books are still looking good, so I'm happy about that.
So looking back on this, does being a small business and having spoken to other small businesses, they see the FedRAMP process as being daunting. Would you recommend other small businesses to go through the same process to obtain this certification?
I think ultimately companies are going to be required to have the FedRAMP certification. You know, when we had the 508C section or whatever that's called, you know, a lot of companies didn't, you know, jump on the bandwagon. Well, now it's a requirement. And, you know, who's going to really, it's ultimately going to happen. So do it now or later. Process may become easier later, but we're excited to be among the first. We like being the pioneers.
Section 508 certification is a little simpler process
little
and less
bit,
costly.
Yes, a little
so
bit.
It's
right.
A difficult thing to. Would you have any advice for anybody thinking about doing the same thing? Is there any lessons learned you'd say, hey, I would approach it a little bit different?
Well, we did hire a company to help us with it. Maybe when there's more information out, because again, it's so new, that maybe as there's more information out there, that maybe it will become less cost. Of course, things are more costly in the beginning. So it will maybe, you know, eventually become less costly and less daunting. You just have to plug through.
Today in the studio, we're talking with Stella Graves, CEO and co-founder, NetComm. So, Stella, a major focus of this administration is cybersecurity, particularly as it relates to the cloud. And, you know, there are still a lot of organizations and government agencies that are concerned about having their data or applications in the cloud. And then, you know, you hear about things like the Target breach and OPM. So what's your perspective on that? How do you think that agencies should or should not move their data and applications to the cloud with an eye to security and cybersecurity in particular?
Well, I think that's what the FedRAMP system is doing for the world, is that they're setting a standard to say this is what is going to help secure your data. Moving on to the cloud is a way to be more efficient and more cost-effective. And having those standards is really important. There's always going to be a security breach, but how severe is that security breach is what the question is going to be. And I think the FedRAMP is going to help curb some of the risks that are associated with being onto the cybersecurity in the cloud.
So only a year and a half ago, the laws changed quite a bit for small women-owned businesses, which really opened it up now to be kept in the same category of all disadvantaged businesses. Have you seen an uptick in the opportunity? And would you recommend our listeners out there that are thinking about the same thing to go after becoming a woman-owned small business?
Well, you know, when we started the company, the 8A was, and we never pursued going that direction. We thought we could just make it on our own. But I think today you have to take advantage of the programs that are available to you. And so right now, fortunately, it's a hot topic to be a woman-owned business. And I think that women should take advantage of that opportunity.
Today in the studio, we're talking with Stella Graves, CEO and co-founder of NetComm. Coming up, we'll ask Stella about the importance of mentorship and mentors in her career. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we're talking to Stella Graves, CEO and co-founder of NetComm. Stella, today women own over 10 million small to medium-sized businesses, and women hold over half of the professional-level jobs, according to a written report by the Joint Economic Committee of the U.S. Congress. But yet, women only earn 78-79 cents on the dollar. You have been a very successful woman-owned business. Why do you think there's such a big delta out there for women in the workforce?
I've never really focused on that issue because it's not something that I'm accustomed to. We don't practice that in our company, and I personally never experienced it. I had the same opportunities as males in my counterpart of my career. So it's not something I focused on. But I do know that recent studies show that companies that have strong women leadership tend to have a 10% versus a 7% equity increase by having women on their boards. So it's important. We bring a different perspective to a company. And I think companies that recognize that will be more successful than other companies.
Do you think the government can do anything about closing the gap? Is there any policy changes that you believe need to be made?
You know, I think women have to do it for themselves too. And they have to pull themselves up and say they can do it and move ahead and not feel the barriers that they may perceive.
So I'm a woman out there. I'm listening to you. What advice do you have to her?
Follow your dreams. Go be passionate with what you want to accomplish and do it. I don't know if it's because I've lived in D.C. all my life and I've been sheltered, but I see so much and so much ability in this area to create what you want to create. There's a lot. This is a land of opportunity. I have, for instance, my daughter's best friend from high school. She was a consultant and working in a high-powered company. She decided to take those consulting skills and start her own cooking consulting business. And she now coaches over 100 people on how to have a better lifestyle by cooking for yourself. So she took an idea and built a business around it because the internet is giving that kind of capability. So you have to take what you have available to you and make the best out of it.
So, Stella, one of the things that many of our guests say that help them in their careers and, frankly, help them to overcome some obstacles is mentorship or sponsorship. So how important do you think that those are today, especially in male-dominated fields like information technology?
I think it's really important, not only mentors, but having good role models and surrounding yourself around positive people who believe in you, and you have to believe in yourself. And finding those people that you can look up to and trying to emulate what's made them successful. I think one thing for us, our honesty and our integrity and our being genuine with our customers and being responsive to them has helped us. And you have to just be genuine with people and be honest.
Have you had the opportunity to mentor younger people along the way?
I have. When my niece graduated from college and was waiting to go to law school, she actually came to work with us. And she learned that technology was just as important as becoming a lawyer. And she actually attributed, and she just recently wrote a book as Women in Leadership Roles, and she attributed that experience that she had with our company as helping her to move forward. And she built her own business, and she overcame adversities and struggles because of some of the life lessons she learned from how we built our business. And she's very successful. I have a sister who I'm really proud of that raised a family and decided to go back to college and became a lawyer at the age of 54. And Virginia is one of the only states that allows you to read for the law. And she worked for an attorney and she read the law for the law and passed the law exam on her first try. So that took perseverance and determination to accomplish that. It was never too late to go towards your passion. So you can start when you're young or you can start when you're old. You can always get there if you have the desire and the will and the perseverance to do it.
And there's another woman in your family that's now working with you and your husband.
Yes, it's interesting. Erin was our third child. She was born 3 weeks after John quit his job. And none of our children really knew what we did. They just knew we fought a lot. And so she was a senior in college, getting ready to graduate with an English major, and had no clue what she was going to do. So she only had like one or two credits left to finish her degree. And I said, look, we just deployed a new software product. We needed a technical manual written. So why don't you go to your professors and ask them if you can write this manual for us and get credit for this class, so that we got the benefit of getting a new manual and she got the benefit of the credits. And when she worked for us, she realized what we did and she liked what we did. So she came on to work for us. She had thought she wanted to work in Europe. And then once she started working for us, she just loved it and is now moved, after 9 years, has moved on to being, you know, one of our lead managers. She's just recently had a child, and she's able to balance a part-time work schedule as a leader and still have time with her child.
So I have to ask the question I asked you earlier about the dynamic and relationship working with your husband. But mothers and daughters, that can also be a little bit sticky. So how has that been?
That's been the worst, actually. Actually, we try to stay away from each other because we are very much alike. And so it's like water and vinegar. Oh, I'm sorry, water and oil. And so, yeah, I leave that up to my husband part because We've learned between the two of us where our skills are, and we learned how to manage that, and it's best that John.
Today in the studio, we're talking with Stella Graves, CEO, co-founder of Netcom. So, Stella, I saw the coolest YouTube video about you and your husband. Stella, you are active in developing more than just your personal next generation, but the next tech-savvy generation. I understand you made a generous donation to the University of Maryland. So, first, tell us about that.
Well, we're really excited about it. We believe in education. We believe we need to educate, you know, the next generation is our future. And our contribution was able to Maryland University purchase the first makerspace. That's where they can make things out of plastic, is what I understand. And we've committed ourselves to a donation each year to the Maryland Initiative and Entrepreneurship Program, and that was one way that they were able to help entrepreneurs to move on.
Well, tell us about the goal of that program.
The goal of that program is to bring the ideas, fearless ideas, to young people and to build their passion for entrepreneurship. And Maryland is one of the leading universities in that area, and we're really excited to be a part of that initiative.
So, Stella, that sounds so exciting. Who can leverage that?
Any of the students or workers at the Maryland University are able to use the makerspace.
So, Stella, it sounds like you have had just a terrifically successful career. But many of the women that we talk to, they do experience setbacks or obstacles that they have to overcome. And some of those are in their career or their personal life. Have you had tough times or obstacles that you've had to overcome?
Working with my husband has probably been one of the biggest obstacles and adversities. But we managed to make it work because we're both determined people. We both persevere.
And so how have you done that? You mentioned that, you know, your kids would see you guys fighting at the dinner table. What strategies have you used when, you know, you're on one side of an issue and he's on another side of an issue to somehow come together and make it work?
Well, we always talk to each other. We can get hot, but then we come back to each other and talk it out. And then we're very reasonable with each other. And so we listen to each other and listen to each other's points of views. And finally come up with a solution. We find a way to work around an issue instead of letting the issue overcome us.
Today in the studio, we're talking with Stella Graves, CEO and co-founder, Netcom. Coming up, we'll ask Stella what she likes to do when she's not working. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we're talking to Stella Graves, CEO and co-founder of Netcom. So, Stella, you had a very successful career and personal life. Now, how have you done it all?
Well, I think first because I picked the right mate, and he's been very supportive of me, and I've been very supportive of him. We've been able to manage a career, four children, because we are compatible with each other, and it's important to have the mate who's going to support you.
So is there any key strategies that you have used or sage advice that may be having challenges with the balance, daycare, whatever?
You know, I think we all try to be super moms and try to do it all, but you really can't do it all, and it's really important to maintain your balance of life as well as the balance of your children and your spouse. And I guess the advice I would give is, and I see it more in young people who are able to take time for themselves as well as be involved in their family life.
Can you think of any times in your life that you've had to make hard choices?
Hard choice was really being there for my children when they needed me there and still be able to run a company and be there for my employees when they needed me there. So, but the fortunate thing, having your own company gives you some flexibility in that you can work when you want and where you want. And that was really important to me because I could do my work at 2 o'clock in the morning if I had to and still be there for my kids when they were going to soccer and everything else.
You know, I found the same kind of challenge with my kids. And sometimes if I just sat them down, and I have four kids too, and asked them what was the important thing for them, for us to be at, they would help me prioritize. And they understood. If you did you ever use that strategy?
Definitely. And the biggest thing was having four children and whose soccer game would you go to and who did what. And so, you know, times we had to split up and they were happy with that. Times they would have to get a ride with somebody, but we would be at the game when the game would start. And we worked together as a family. It was important to give and take on all sides. And I think our children really were very accommodating to that, and they understood it, and they knew that we were there for them. We were very active. They all four ran competitively in high school, and we were very active in their competitive life in high school.
So, Stella, what do you like to do when you're not working?
Well, out of sanity, I had to start running at the age of 40 because I was either going to go on Valium or I was going to learn how to take time for myself.
Is that when your kids were teenagers, or what was it that was?
That was when they were teenagers, and they were all on the cross. Like I said, John was a cross country runner. He had run a marathon. My children were all getting into cross country and track, and I saw that this was a way for us to be have an activity as a family. We all would run the YMCA turkey chase each year, and it's become a tradition in our family for the over 20 years. We've all run this race in the morning of Thanksgiving. It's a great way to start your morning, and now our grandchildren are doing it. We have six grandchildren, and they all ran the race this year. Normally, we would run the 10K, but with the kids, we did the 2-mile, and I was really proud of my granddaughter that she took upon herself to run with me, and we were slow and steady, and she talked the whole time, and she was able to finish 2 miles in 22 minutes. And I thought, for a 9-year-old, that was pretty impressive. So I'm hoping that I've kind of been a role model to my grandkids as well.
Absolutely. Pursue. They have to keep up with grandma.
Yeah. So I started running when I was 40 to keep up with my kids. And I love to cook. So I assist at the Academy de Cuisine in Bethesda in their recreational program. And actually, I've been doing that for now 4 years. I've assisted this one chef who's just outstanding. And she's teaching you how to have a better lifestyle by learning how to cook. And I see a lot of women in that class, amazingly, who have children who don't know how to cook. And it's good to see that they're doing that now.
So you mentioned early in the interview that you owned a farm in Frederick and that you were hoping that technology could get you back to the farm. So did it get you back to the farm, and do you grow your own vegetables now?
Well, after having four kids, they didn't want to move back to the farm. They liked the city life. So we kept the farm, and our son actually lives on the farm now with his four children. And we continue to grow vegetables. We had a farmer who lived also on the property who raised cows. So up until last year, I had never bought meat, and our kids grew up organic without even realizing they were organic. So our goal was to go back to the farm, but that didn't happen because the children didn't want to move back. But the automation has helped us now to be able to work from home, and now we have a summer home in Easton. It also is a farm that we have a greenhouse and want to grow organic food again. And because of technology, it's made the world much smaller, that we can live where we want and still be able to be productive. And I just wanted to point out, like a friend of my daughter's had moved to California. Miss and her husband both were from this area, both wanted to come back to this area, and they were able to move back to D.C. and still keep their California jobs. So I just thought that was amazing how the world is just shrinking with us.
Absolutely. And I know that the government has got a lot of telecommuting options available now to government employees, too. Is that something, when you started your company, you know, 30 years ago, is that something that you offered your employees from the beginning, the opportunity to telecommute and telework?
We practice what we preach, and we have fully made our company teleworking capability. We didn't miss a beat when we had the Jonas storm. Everyone was able to work from home. You know, someone asked, you know, were you stressed out that you weren't didn't have your employees at work? And it's like, no, they were all working. There was no question about that. And so teleworking is a really important facet. I even realized, you know, when they closed the government, it's actually now a good thing for the safety of everyone. Back when we were working for the government, you had to make your way into work. It was a necessity. Now, with all the teleworking in the government as well, people can work at home and still not miss a beat. So, you know, they're saving the taxpayers money, but everybody's staying safe. So that's what the cloud, I think, is going to also do more for us. And again, the need for this FedRAMP. So we have standards on keeping the security to allow people to work from home, put less cars on the road. And, you know, we need to take advantage of the technology that we have. And you see sometimes companies not being willing to move forward, but to survive as a society, we need to make these changes.
Absolutely. Although I think that's a very positive, and you have just a great positive outlook on everything that we've talked about. But it also probably does present some management challenges to try to manage a staff that is virtual and not there, and you don't see what they're doing. And so can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, we put a lot of trust in our employees. I think we treat them as family, and they know that. And I think because we've given them so much trust, they don't want to let us down, just like your children. They don't want for you to be upset with them. And so we know that they're giving their 100% effort. Because we've been good to them, they've been even more dedicated to us. We have our major employees worked for us, has been with us for 20 years. And, you know, in the technology world, to have employees working for you 10 years is something to be said, because I think they trust us, they know we're good to them, and they're going to be good to us. And that's what's made our success.
Today in studio, we're talking with Stella Graves, CEO and co-founder of Netcom. So, Stella, I have to ask you this question. We ask it of most of our guests. If you were to go back in time and to your younger self as she was getting ready to graduate, three pieces of advice would you give her?
I would first give her the advice that you can do anything you want to set yourself to do. That your adversities define who you are, and you just have to be positive and surround yourself around positive people and believe in yourself that you can do what you want to accomplish.
Today in the studio, we've been talking with Stella Graves, CEO and co-founder of Netcom. Aileen and I are founders of Accelerated Government Strategies. You can learn more about AGS and the work we can do to help accelerate your business plans for public sector at excelgovstrat.com. I'm Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Women of Washington on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.